Financial officer who has been asked to act as a compensation fund commissioner. The commissioner has to make sure that he deals with issues relating to finance. So there's a finance advisory committee of the board. So I said to him he can stay behind us and make sure that we represent him fairly. I'm tendering that apology. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to do a sort of an introduction to the presentation, Chairperson, and thereafter, Ms. Ngonyo will take us through the presentation. The unemployment insurance fund has a precondition for anybody who has to access the unemployment benefits. One of the conditions is that the beneficiary has to be available for the labor market. So which means that if you come and claim you're still regarded as very active, so you need to then register with the with public employment services as somebody who's available for any job opportunity. One of the reasons that I guess the legislature put that provision was to make sure that we don't exacerbate the issue of unemployment, and we have a challenge in the country of the high unemployment rate, but also to deal with the issues of the high levels of vulnerability for individuals, families, and communities, but also to address the issues of poverty. With the departure of skills development in the department, which was relocated to Department of Higher Education and Training, we were left with a component that we now call public employment services. Now, the role of public employment services is to make sure that job opportunities are made available and there's vocational training that takes place. So which means that the UIF beneficiaries are put through a training program. Not only the UIF beneficiaries, but you know, the all those who are available in the labor market to be able to access jobs. So how it works is that the beneficiaries will register on the system, and if there are job opportunities that have been reported on the system, they will be what we call job matching, based on the skills and the competences that people possess, and they will then be placed. However, if we see that there's a gap in terms of the skills, they go through what we call vocational training, and that's where the Unemployment Insurance Fund assists through its labor activation program to fund the vocational training and bridging the skills gap that what beneficiaries have. Ms. Nonya will take us through the presentation in terms of what is it that we do exactly. But I wanted to give that introduction. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair President, the DG has already done the introduction. I'm sorry for that. Our focus will be what does labor activation program do? To implement the sections that have been quoted by the Director General, we have a labor activation framework which outlines the following goals: creation of employment opportunities and business opportunities. I'll talk more on business opportunities under enterprise development. The program is also focusing on skilling and reskilling of the unemployed UIF beneficiaries. It is also combating long-term unemployment and also poverty reduction, as the DG has already indicated. These are the key areas of focus when it comes to labor activation program. We are focusing on training the unemployed. We are also assisting companies that are in distress through GLS and also through Productivity SA that provides turnaround solutions. As indicated earlier, we are also participating in the space of providing business opportunities for the unemployed UIF beneficiaries. We also work in partnership with government departments, state-owned entities, development finance institutions, NGOs, and private sector. Who are the unemployed UIF beneficiaries? Who are the UIF beneficiaries? The UIF beneficiaries, it is those people that were working, contributing to UIF. At some point, they got retrenched because of various reasons. The key areas of participation I've already indicated. These are the programs that we have done in the previous financial year. The target that we were given in the previous financial year was to train 5,000 UIF beneficiaries. The DG has indicated that in 2009, the skills development was transferred to higher education and training. There are people that are always raising concerns. What are we doing with training when training has been transferred to higher education and training? The reality is that we have these unemployed UIF beneficiaries. We were collecting their money whilst they were working. So what happens when they get retrenched? They claim not more than 8 months. The question is, what happens after 8 months if they don't get jobs? So the department has a responsibility to ensure that those people are reskilled. So to address the issue, because there are people that think that as Department of Labor, UIF in particular, we are suffering from denial, we are not accepting the fact that training has been moved away. So we are working in partnership with higher education and training. Most of the programs, when we are funding the projects, we go on 50-50 basis. So we had a target of training 1,000 learners working in partnership with M2A. M2A is a center that focuses on mining-related training programs. As indicated earlier, the partnership is based on 50-50 funding model. The target was 1,000 learners. Out of 1,000 learners, we had 569 UIS beneficiaries. 431 were non-UIS beneficiaries. Out of the 667 learners who have completed the training thus far, 400 have been absorbed. 266 are still unemployed. 232 are employed in permanent employment, on permanent basis. 28 are employed on contract basis. 140 were verified through a CIS declaration, the system that we have as UIF. We also work in partnership with Mercita on 50-50 basis. The target was 1,500. So far, we have managed to train 806. Out of the 806, 708 are UIF beneficiaries and 102 are non-UIF beneficiaries. Chairperson, we are also working in partnership with the MICT Center. MICT Center is a center that focuses on ICT. The program was divided into two phases. Phase one was targeting 1,000 learners. 800 were doing end user computing and 200 were doing technical skills working through telco. The remaining 200 telecom learners, out of the 200, 192 are UIF beneficiaries, 8 are non-UIF beneficiaries, 7 learners they dropped out, 193 continued, and then the 3 learners contracts they were terminated due to misconduct. Out of 190 who have completed the training, 50 are employed, 10 are receiving 24 months additional training. The reason why we see it is important that we must indicate how many UIF beneficiaries and how many non-UIF beneficiaries is because our core mandate is to take care of UIF beneficiaries. But it is difficult when we are going to the communities to tell them that no, a young person could please go home, you are not part of our mandate. The reason why it is difficult to tell young people that they can't be part of our program is that communities, when they see us as government. They do not see us as pocket of government. So working in partnership with the CITAS assists us to also cater for those that are non-UIF beneficiaries. MICT CITAS phase two, the target was 2,000, and again, on this partnership, is on 50-50 basis when it comes to the funding. 1,925 were recruited for training. 1,099 are UIF beneficiaries, and 826 are non-UIF beneficiaries. Out of the 1,925 learners that were recruited for training, 925 had completed both theory and practicals. 700 are currently in the workplace and experiential learning. There's the last batch of 300 that is currently finalizing the theory. There is another program that we are doing in partnership with Energy and Water Sweeter. Chairperson, honorable members, we realize that there is a challenge in the country. When we're looking at the solar geysers that were installed a few years ago, most of those solar geysers, they become white elephants. Reason being, when these solar geysers are installed by companies, there is no one in the community who is left with the skills. So we then felt that let's come up with a program that is going to assist communities to have skills, so that when the company that has been doing installation goes back to wherever it comes from, at least the communities must be left with empowered people so as to assist in fixing, in repairing whatever needs attention when it comes to those solar geysers. So we then felt that let's start small and see how we move forward. So the program is piloted at Ebu Rumeni Municipality. The target was 300 learners. Out of the 300 learners, 166 are UIF beneficiaries, 133 are non-UIF beneficiaries. Three learners have dropped out. Group 1 of 147 learners have completed their learnership on the 30th of June. Group 2 is due to complete on the 30th of November 2015. We were approached by Department of Energy, having seen the program that we are piloting at Ebu Rumeni. Because of the success story so far regarding those young people that have been trained on how to install solar geysers, the Department of Energy is going to work in partnership with UIF in training in 77 municipalities. Initially, as Department of Energy, they had planned to target 54 municipalities, but having approached us, and we also committed the sum of money, so hence the number of municipalities increased from 54 to 77 municipalities in the country. We are also doing another program in partnership with Cheetah. Cheetah is a center that focuses on transport-related training programs. We have 100 learners. The target is 100 learners. Again, it's on 50-50 basis. So Cheetah was allocated 50 learners, and UIF was also allocated 50 learners. Out of 41 learners that have been recruited, 15 are UIF beneficiaries. The rest are non-UIF beneficiaries. I want to believe, certain honorable members were wondering why so little when it comes to UIF beneficiaries. The challenge was that the basic requirement for anyone to participate in the program must have basic swimming skills. So there was a challenge when our UIF beneficiaries were recruited from the ESA system. Almost all of them, they failed the basic requirements. Hence, out of 41, we only have 15 UIF beneficiaries. The remaining learners are going to be recruited from the coastal provinces so as to align with the project PACISA that was launched by the president. We also have another partnership program that we are doing with CITA again, focusing on professional driving. It's on 50-50 basis. The target is 140 learners. Out of 140 learners, 63 learners are UIF beneficiaries. We also have another partnership program that we're doing with CHITA, focusing on a number of apprenticeship skills, as indicated, your auto electrical, diesel mechanics, and others. The target is 637. So far, only 120 UIF beneficiaries have been recruited. There is also another program, a training program that we are doing with a teacher on 50-50 basis, which is a training of pilots. The target is 20 learners. All 20 learners have been recruited. Out of 20, we only had 13 UIF beneficiaries, 7 are non-UIF beneficiaries, and the training has started. Chairperson, 20 may sound like it's a drop in an ocean, but it is a contribution that the Department of Labor is doing. The reason why we said let's focus on 20 is because a training pilot is very expensive. To train one learner is around 1 million. Yeah, it's 900,000, it's around, it's almost 1 million. So it was not easy to talk about big numbers as we are doing in other partnership programs. But the good story to tell when it comes to this one, the South African Express is assisting in terms of monitoring. They have committed in writing that if all goes well, they are going to take all these learners as their pilots. We are also having another program whereby we are focusing on construction skills. The program, we are doing this program in partnership with the municipalities and TVET colleges. In each TVET college, we support with a sum of 1.8 million. It is a tripartite arrangement. It's the Department of Labor that is signing the contract together with the TVET College and the municipality. The reason why we felt that it is important to ensure that the municipalities must form part of this partnership is these learners are going to be trained on theory for a period of 4 months. After 4 months, they are going to be doing experiential learning, practicing whatever they have memorized in a classroom situation, whether it's plastering, plumbing, replaying, painting. But the only way to do those practicals is to work in partnership with the municipalities. It's not easy engaging some of the municipalities, but some they have agreed to come on board, hence the asset interest of the program. In Free State, we have signed with Motewo, Tibet College, and Mangaung Municipality. We have signed with Goldfield, Tibet College, and Machabeng. We have signed with Flavius, Mareka, Tibet, and Mukaka Municipality. Lastly, in Free State, we have signed an MOU with Maluti, Tibet College, and also Maluti Akofung Municipality. in KwaZulu-Natal, we signed with Coastal College and also eThekwini Metro. We signed with Umgungu Ndlovu, TVET College and Umsunduzi Municipality. SID with Harry Kwala and Mzwabantu Municipalities. We have also signed with Mfolozi, Kwadukuza and Mfolozi Hlathuba Municipality. And we have also signed with Nambithi, TVET College and Nambithi Municipality. In Eastern Cape, we have signed with Ingwe Matatiel, Ingwe Mount, Ingwe Mzimvungu, and King Yiza, and Mwama Municipality. In Western Cape, so far, we have signed with Gorland, TVET College and Cape Agala. We have also signed at Limpopo with Sekhukhune and Elias Motsoaledi Municipality. As indicated earlier, that we are also participating in the space of enterprise development. In the previous financial year, these are the areas that we trained aspiring entrepreneurs. Why are we also training aspiring entrepreneurs? We realize that there is a challenge when it comes to unemployed UIF beneficiaries, people of my age in particular, if I can make an example. It is difficult to confine them in a classroom situation. Rightfully so, they have, some of them have been working in mines, they've been working in a number of companies, they are used in the salaries that they've been getting. So the program that we are doing, the training program that we are doing, we find that we confine a person in a classroom situation for 12 months, at times for 3 years. So we pay a stipend, the minimum stipend that we pay is 1,000 rand per month. So those people, they are not comfortable, these unemployed UIF beneficiaries that are above age 35 in particular. They are not comfortable. They do appreciate the skills that we are providing, but they don't want to be confined in a classroom situation for such a long time. So when we were interviewing them, they were indicating that I'm selling cabbages, tomatoes, I'm a hawker in the bus ranks. That's when we realized that they are another category. When we started the program, we were assuming that unemployed UIF beneficiaries, all of them are job seekers. We then discovered that there is another a category, which is job creators, entrepreneurs. That's when the minister suggested that let's come up with a program that is going to focus on developing those aspiring entrepreneurs. In Eastern Cape, in the last financial year, we have trained at Alfred Nzo 18, at Chris Hani 14. In KwaZulu-Natal, in Devon, we trained 11. Richards Bay, we trained 19. At Ekurhuleni, city of Ekurhuleni, we've trained 259. In Free State, we've trained 19 at Kroonstad, 21 at Velkom, 25 Waterville, 23 Kutalichaba, 21 Race, and 20 at Sakolberg. The reason why we have numbers like 11, 14 is we normally say in a classroom at least we must have 25 trainees. But CETA has a tool that they use whereby they are able to differentiate between an aspiring entrepreneur and an ordinary person whom we may call a job seeker. So UIF beneficiaries have a tendency of saying they when there is an opportunity that is coming, they will say, oh, we also want to be trained on entrepreneurship. But when they get trained, when they are given assignments, those assignments make it easy for a CEDA to realize that this one is not a real entrepreneur. This one was just excited when he or she heard that there was a program that is coming from the Department of Labor. We are in a process of finalizing enterprise development strategy, whereby our aspiring entrepreneurs are going to be referred to development financial institutions, and also they are going to be referred to markets. We have run a parallel process while developing this draft enterprise development strategy, but on the other side, we said, let us test the market. There was a question that was posed. If we are saying these UIS beneficiaries, they are going to be registered as they are going to be registered so that they can own companies, they are going to be registered as cooperatives. There were a number of questions that were raised when we were presenting the draft. What is it that is going to be unique about the cooperatives? Because most of these cooperatives, they are no longer operational. So we then said, to respond to the question about the uniqueness of the UIF program when it comes to cooperatives, we are going to scout the business opportunities on behalf of the unemployed UIF beneficiaries. Thank you. We are going to scout business opportunities on behalf of them. Why do we think it is important that we scout business opportunities? It's because some of them, they are in deep, deep rural areas. They've lost hope. And most of these business opportunities, we find that they are in Cape Town, they are in Joburg in particular. There is no way that a person will come from Kutumbo all the way driving or taking a bus from Kutumbo to Sandton, where the head of South African Breweries is, to Woolworths in Cape Town, where the head office of Woolworths is. Hence, we're saying it is going to be UIF that is actually doing the scouting of business opportunities and channel those UIF beneficiaries to those opportunities. So we've done a parallel process because we've tried to test the market, because you may prepare a document and at some point you realize that the document is gathering dust, it is difficult to implement it. We said, while drafting, let's also test the market. We've engaged South African breweries. They are eager, they are looking forward to working in partnership with us. They are actually saying they want 200,000 tons of yellow maize per annum, and currently South African farmers are failing to meet the demand. So what is happening, they are importing yellow maize. So we are currently negotiating with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform so as to see how best can we work together to utilize the farms that are that belong to Rural Development and Land Reform. They do not want yellow maize only. They also indicated that they are also they would offer offtake agreements when it comes to hops. Hops is in Western Cape. They also want barley. I think the list is long, but those were the three issues that they were keen to work in partnership with us. And then we've also approached Woolworths. Woolworths is also keen to come on board. We have also approached Spa. Spa is also keen to come on board. They are finalizing the proposed partnership document on the week of the 17th. We also have another program whereby we are assisting companies in distress and also the employees that are about to be laid off. The name of the program is called TLS, Training Layoff Scheme. The program is funded by UIF 100%. In the previous financial year, we managed to assist 14 companies through training layoff scheme, whereby 2,084 workers were affected. They were going to be laid off, so we assisted through the program. In the previous financial year, when it comes to this program, we committed a sum of 50.6 million for training allowances in those companies. There is also another program, but we decided not to include it, the one for turnaround solutions, which is done by Productivity SA. So Productivity SA, when it comes to a provision of turnaround solutions to companies that are in distress, they are funded 100% by the UIF. We also have other schemes that have been approved, but they are not yet implemented. We are going to be working in partnership with Moses Kotane Institute on 50-50 basis when it comes to maritime programs, training on boat building, skipper license, maritime import and export management, and maritime technician. As indicated earlier, that we are doing the pilot at Ekurhuleni Municipality, but before we could even finish the pilot, because of the success stories based on the program that we are doing at Ekurhuleni, we are going to implement the solar geyser, the training on solar geyser installation. I think if it goes well, it's supposed to start sometime in October this year. The target is 77 municipalities in the country. There is also another program on construction skills again, in partnership with the Department of Public Works. Department of Public Works is not contributing in monetary form, but their contribution is that they are going to assist us when it comes to experiential learning for our learners. We are going to make use of their infrastructure projects that they have in the provinces. Another one that has been approved is whereby you are going to be working in partnership with Human Settlements, focusing on construction skills. At some point they had no money, but just recently they've indicated that when it comes to this partnership, they are not going to assist us with workplace experience only. They have also set aside a sum of 20 million to work in partnership with us. And again, there is another partnership program focusing on maritime skills. As we all know, that there is Operation Takisa that was launched by the President, focusing on unlocking economic potential from South African oceans. It's 100% going to be funded by UIF. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That is all for today.
Thank you so much for listening. I think it's me and actually feel that it's very difficult to be in my home. Now I'm being we assist so that you do more. Members,
thank you for that elucidating report. I appreciate it. The company couple of comments I do want to make, but an overall comment is maybe the department should be outsourcing the training, the teaching, to institutions that know how to do it. Because you seem to have wholly failed in attracting numbers. I understand that you are starting a new project and a new program. I understand that it's difficult to do something that you're not qualified to do. But I believe strongly that the department should be maybe assisting institutions, technical colleges, universities of technology, etc., etc., and let them run the projects, and you'll probably find that you'll have far better results. Just in terms of the layoff scheme, that I think we must all agree that is a complete failure. Both the unions and management are very suspicious of the layoff scheme, and in fact your numbers tell us that story in any event. The whole country is going through major retrenchments just about everywhere, in every industry. The workforce is shrinking at an alarming rate. And yet no one's making use of the layoff scheme. We've had not numbers to give us, but it's less than 20 different institutions. And it's a scheme that could be wonderful. It could be fantastic, because what you're really looking at is trying to retrain people in other skills. And yet somehow the unions are really suspicious to use it. And I know my interaction with the soldier-based unions telling us just that. And maybe you could let us have some comments as to why the unions are so suspicious. My experience has also been that when people are being retrenched, they don't want to go apart. They don't want to become part of the labor scheme, but they want to access the money. They want their servants' benefits, they want their pension fund, they want their notice paid, etc., etc. And then unfortunately, once you've got that, you take off your debt and you haven't got a job and you haven't got a skill. And yet the labor scheme is probably world class. I think it's probably the best in the world that I've seen. And somehow there must be a way of doing this. And again, I'm suggesting that we look at a partnership with institutions, especially the universities of technology. We've got some great universities of technology that have the wherewithal and have the skills, but maybe the department then could put some money into it and then partner with them, as opposed to you bringing in seekers to come and partner you. Let's look at it the other way around. Let the seekers be the leading partner in it, and you then just influencing and maybe directing, helping them do it. And as another overall comment, I think these figures are, although you're sitting us at the start and you're having certain difficulties, I think they're minimal.
Program or a project, however you Thank you.
but having appreciated it, the first one was to say, think that you don't meet your target. How can communities help you? Because it may happen that your recruitment strategy is not reaching the owners of South Africa. The second one is, let us move away from the notion to say all good things are coming from Johannesburg. When our fathers were miners, we had an understanding that all good things are coming from Johannesburg. I'm raising this because if you are piloting things in Ekurhuleni, you are taking coal to Newcastle. Why don't you then, when you intend to pilot, in your pilot you send your urban experience as well as your rural one? Because you may come up with an outcome from Ekurhuleni which will not fit home, as you have indicated. Our passion as a committee is that let's go where poverty is most. I'm not saying where poverty is there, I'm saying where it is most. When you go to urban areas, they are not suffering as our rural people. So let's rather ensure that we target more the rural areas. If you look at the Eastern Cape and the Northern Cape, they are among the provinces that usually do not benefit from this thing. So when you say you for the flight on this side, you say you are still going to go to Eastern Cape, Western Cape and Northern Cape, you can't go and look for a fish in a forest. You'll find fish at sea. Those are coastal provinces, you say. Why do you focus at them from the onset? Your Eastern Cape, your Western Cape, but not Northern Cape. I think you say that and another coastal province. So if you are saying you can't get swimmers, you won't get swimmers in Northern Cape. They have the black hole. I'm sorry, my friend. To come on the back of that question, you indicated you on page 5 on your slide, that out of the 41 you couldn't get, that you don't need to move last week, you know, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and Northern Cape, and if I made my calculation correctly, would be approximately 8 people that would be identified or registered. And it's not impacting as we would like it to be. So my next question would be, how do you identify trainees in terms of geographical areas? Seeing that as been previously said by the previous speaker, some areas like the Northern Cape are really not very particularly in this initiative. Then we look at the, as you said, your mail is in terms of the UI beneficiary that you recognize in people's citizens, and in the case of municipalities, in the case of Department of Energy, we know there's this new proposed initiative by the Department of Communication in terms of the digital migration program that they want to partner with UIS in terms of the training of the installers. Can you elaborate more if it has the thing would be materializing, if you are considering it, because it would be to the advantage of our project that we want to see it materialized, but it's not being mentioned anyway. Then we look at the training of learners of beneficiaries. You mentioned in terms of the entrepreneurs that you try to scout for them for placement, but it's not mentioned anywhere in terms of the other trainees if you are not in replacement after training or after getting the skills. So if you can elaborate more on that also. If we look at the types of training that you are doing, we don't have a or I don't have a sense of which kind of training are we prioritizing in terms of skills. Can you please elaborate more if you are taking skills into consideration when offering skills to or reskilling in terms of the beneficiary? I think I'll pause there, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Can you do another
thank you, Chairperson. Of the 5,000 targets, Glenna, are they randomly selected, or is the selection as per program? My second question would be the criteria of selection for non-UIF beneficiaries. And are they the non-UIF beneficiaries expected to pay a certain fee for the training? The last is the third question, not the last thing. On training on construction and entrepreneurial skills, you mentioned other provinces but not other than like the previous speaker. I also think it is unfair to those provinces that are not mentioned at all if there is nothing in place. The last question has a technology of the 77 municipalities registered to participate on visa installations. How many are rural municipalities? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mona. From the Montessa. I still remember the name of the command.
Thank you. Hello, about the lunch. Okay, we have to do the poster and that's a bit of a okay. My questions and comments are around the issue of the benefiting area. How do you see that? For example, I'm from Ukraine, but 259 only from there. Then what about the rest of the country? So I think we must try to share the cake to other areas as well. The question of selecting the individuals as well. How do you and again, the most focused area, which is the rural areas, which is affected by poverty than us. We're not saying there's no poverty in other areas, but the rural is more affected. How are you trying to make sure that they are covered in this province? Because really, if there will be installation of solar business in deep rural of KZN or the Boko somewhere there, are you going to take a company from the community or people from the community to install it? So what about training those people? If private sector cannot, they don't have that desire to reach their rural people, who else? Must cover it. The government and the institutions must do something for these people. And if you train those people, we will be able to create jobs for themselves in those areas. But if we keep on going where we think there is business companies. That means we never keep employment in unemployment in rural areas. Thank you.
No, thank you, members. When you take these people for training, I think the question of situation process is important as well. I want to invite on the members of that question, your question. And when they are away, do they get an allowance? What is that you offer a department in the office? I'm asking you because I know you mentioned the program that they are doing as well, taking people away to train them on achieving skills in building. Those people get a certain amount of money at the end of the month. So we are also provided with toiletries. And the age limit as well. I think the target is the youth of which I'm not sure which one or are all these for the youth. And the requirements for each program. For instance, the training of pilots. What requirements do you need? Which one of these programs needs a requirement of grade 12? Which one of the programs where the transport anybody would know anybody in terms, then you specify the issues as well. But that's information. Oh, what do you? Precondition to access your benefits. So that's what we want to
our benefits to our beneficiary to understand that for now you may access the money, but in the long run you need to sustain your livelihood, and the only way of doing that is to participate in these programs that we are running as a department of it. The third point that you raised is the issue relating to the fact that this program is not touching the economy. I think you're correct, it is not touching the economy because this program has just been started. And it was very important for us to be very cautious, to take a very cautious approach, so that you don't throw money into something that may not necessarily not use the positive result that you expected and everything. And so you might be aware that during the budget votes, the minister made an announcement that the unemployment insurance fund has set aside an amount of about 10 billion. And the reason for setting aside that 10 billion is to scale up this project so that we can reach a much more bigger pool than what we are doing now. But the positive side of this is that whoever is participating in the project, the project has left a permanent mark in the life of that individual. And I agree with you, scaling up will be the priority for the department going forward. You also raised the issue relating to the layoff scheme, that it is a complete failure. The layoff scheme has been around for some time now. And you remember that this was put in place at the time where we had the financial crisis. And it was put there to make sure that companies have a fund that they can access to mitigate the effects of the financial crisis. Now, the uptake has not been that good. And one of the reasons is the criteria that was used was to ask companies to be as open as possible. So put their card on the table, their financial reports, and so that if you're going to be accepted, we need to know the extent of the problem that we're dealing with. And we could sense some reluctance on the part of the private companies to share that information with the department. And equally so, I don't think that unions have been playing their role in making sure that the layoff scheme becomes a success that it's supposed to be. And of course, there might have been a few bureaucratic challenges in terms of releasing the funding, but the bigger part is the interest shown by the company to get access to the funding and to be accepted. It continues to be a challenge, but we're trying to put more to advocate the importance of this scheme. It really doesn't, I mean, it amazes me that you have a scheme which, as you rightly pointed out, speaks to address and help companies, and the uptake is abysmal, ridiculous. But we are talking to organized business, we're trying to find out what is it that we could do to generate interest so that we can help companies. I mean, under normal circumstances, there shouldn't be a company that goes under. And there shouldn't be a company that lays off people when there's an auction in the country. And like you said, this is one of the things that you know is unique about this program, is that there are very few countries that are running such a program. I'm trying to look at one of the things that we do whenever the I'm not going to talk about the selection criteria, but the almost all the beneficiaries when they partake in this project, they get what we call a stipend. It may not be that much, but I think it is substantial for a learner or somebody who didn't have a R1,000 on a monthly basis. That's what we give them. Honourable Member Jobo raised the question about whether the unemployment insurance fund reacts when young people are about to lose their jobs. We have programs that sort of kick in and prevent job losses. There are two approaches here. One is the unemployment insurance fund. When you lose a job, you get a temporary relief. That's what the legislation is going for. The second part is we have productivity South Africa, which when companies are in distress, productivity South Africa comes in with companies who can what are the challenges, do a proper diagnosis and then propose solutions. And key to some of the solutions that we found is there's one slide where Ms. Mourinho was saying we have intervened in about 91 companies and in the process we saved about just over 2,000 jobs. This is part of the social plan that we have, which is funded by the Unemployment Insurance Fund. So we do have that, and there's a requirement in the law that when companies are about to retrench, they must inform the department so that we can then extract the social plan, bring in the productivity of Africa to see whether they can save the company. And if they think that the company can be saved, they then develop strategies to save the company. And of course, it depends on the collaboration between productivity South Africa and the management of these companies. But we do have a program to try and avoid the loss of employment.
I just wanted to know how often do you think you do this visit? Which ones are currently requested now? So that if you want to go and visit, you can visit and see them in training and the environment.
Ms.
Moya
will respond to the question.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Regarding TLS, the city has already responded to that. But there was also a concern about involving institutions of higher learning. We did indicate on the slide that we are talking about partnership with the TLS. That we, in the current program that we're doing, we are investing a sum of 1.8 million per TVET college. we did indicate to those that have already signed, others are still in the process. So we did not write the names of the others that are still in the process. There's a tricky situation. Some of the TVET colleges are eager to sign, but if the municipality has not yet agreed to come on board, there is always a delay. There was a question about assisting when people are already retrenched, they are already at home. The nature of the UIF program, by virtue of being an insurance, it's an unemployment insurance fund. Hence, we come when people are already unemployed. We are plowing back. We are investing through skills development to those that are contributing when they are no longer away. I think this is the nature of an insurance. It always comes when there is a problem, when there is a crisis. There was an issue on the point of making use of institutions of higher learning. What we normally do, we advertise expression of interest. So the institutions that are participating currently, some of them, they came through through their responses when we had advertised expression of interest. So very soon we are going to advertise another one before end of August. It is also inclusive of institutions of higher learning, your TVET colleges, your universities. So it is not easy sometimes to impose when you are going to support with money. So the institutions are expected to respond to our adverts. There was a point, other points, I assume they are for noting, that when moving forward, we need to also consider some of the issues that we raised in this meeting. There was a point that was raised about dressmaking. We've also noted that because in the current specifications that we are doing, the advert that is going to come out soon, we did not include dressmaking. So we've noted that. We included a number of skills, but we did not include facility. There was a question of we were not specific when it comes to the provinces that we are doing this training. For instance, in Limpopo, we are at Vembe. Can you connect? Vembe, Mupani, Capricorn, and Greater Sekhukhune when it comes to MICT theater training. In Eastern Cape is Alfred Nzo, Amathole, Takadu, Kritsani, Jokabi, and O.R. Tambo. Mpumalanga, Ihlanzeni, Gert, Sibande, Kangala. KwaZulu Natal, Ugu, eThekwini, Ilembe, uThungulu, uMkhanyakude, Zululand, uMgungundlovu, amaJuba, Herikwala, almost all the 11 districts, 10 plus 1 in KwaZulu-Natal. Western Cape is Central Karoo, City of Cape Town, Eden, George, yes, Matsigama, and West Coast. Northern Cape is Francis Bart, Sianda, John Taulo, Namakwa. Northwest Bujanala, Dr. Kenneth Kaunda, Dr. Ruth Mupati, Ngata Mudiri Mulema, Free State Spezile Dadi, I always practice with the son, Zareb District, Harib District, Thabo Mofutsanyana, Lijweli Poswa, Gauteng City of Tswane, Joburg, Citybeam, and West Rand. I'll quickly jump to the there was a concern about piloting at Eburuleng. The minister had the same concerns that are being raised in this meeting. Why Eburuleng? Why not the rural municipality? The concern is noted. The reason why we piloted with Eburuleng municipality, the training program is divided into two phases. Phase one focuses on theory. Phase two focuses on experiential learning, practical, which is practical. So we tried hard to look at a municipality in the year 2014-2015 that was going to embark on solar geyser installation, because the pilot was meant to be done during 2014-2015. So amongst the rural municipalities by then, we couldn't find anyone that was ready to do the actual installation. We knew that at some point there will be municipalities, rural municipalities, that are going to do this program. But just because we were eager to start with a pilot before doing the rollout, we then discovered that Eburuleng municipality had a plan to do solar geyser installation. So we ended up partnering with them. Reason being, we did not want to find ourselves in a situation whereby our learners are only taught theory. They are not going to get their certificate, their qualification, if they do theory only. So after doing practicals, that then they get the recognized qualification. So that's the reason why we had to focus at Eburuleng, because after the 6 months in class, they are expected to be seen climbing on top of the roof doing the actual installation. I hope I've made that point clear, Honorable Chairperson and Member. And then there's a point that has been raised regarding maritime and coastal provinces. When we started the program, yes, we are partnering with PETA. PETA that belongs to another department, they have their own targets, their own plans. So the operation Pakistan was not yet there when we started the project. So I want to believe even the cheetah that ended up is recruiting within Gauteng province, it was because Operation Pakistan project had not yet started. I think it was only launched last year, am I correct? This year? July 2014. So upon realizing that there is this empowering program focusing on unlocking economic potential from South African Ocean, we said, fortunately for us as Department of Labor, we have not yet started recruiting. Hence, we said we are going to align the program with the coastal provinces only. KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Western Cape. So it has started, training has already started in recruitment was done in KwaZulu-Natal. We are planning to move to Eastern Cape. After Eastern Cape, it's going to be Western Cape and Northern Cape. Selection criteria. The target that we were given was 5,000 unemployed UIF beneficiaries. But the total number of people that we trained was around 8,000. Reason being, we were inundated with requests that were coming from people that are non-UIF beneficiaries. We did indicate that it's always problematic to tell people that you are not our poor man, you belong to another department. So we ended up training 8,000 learners. We exceeded the target, but when it comes to UIF beneficiaries, we did exceed 5,000. How do we recruit? The DG did indicate that there is public. 5,000 was for the previous financial year, but we exceeded 5,000. We ended up training 8,000. But we did not report about this 8,000 because our core mandate is unemployed UIF beneficiaries. We ended up talking about the 5,000.
Then on the
mic.
On the 5,000 retention one,
yes.
Were they like taking from
different
all provinces?
Okay, through you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Ma'am. They were taken from all provinces. We have labour centres in all provinces, in all districts. So there is a system which is called ESA, which belongs to Department of Labor, managed by Public Employment Services. All job seekers in the country are expected to register in that system. So how do we recruit? We take our potential learners from ESA system.
Do you want to add regarding ESA system?
Yeah.
The recruitment.
Oh.
Through you, Chairperson, Honourable Member, the recruitment that we do is that all unemployed UIF beneficiaries are supposed to register on the ESA system as work seekers. And as the DG has elaborated earlier, the requirement for them to access benefits is that they should be available for placement on any program, whether on permanent jobs, contract jobs, apprenticeships, or learnerships. So that is the requirement. As we partner with these different institutions, we request that they inform their host employers, because as you know, the seekers are also not training. They are doing a monitoring of the training. The training is done by the host employers, who also go and appoint service providers to do the training. So we make it a requirement in the agreement to say that you need to inform your host employers that they need to recruit from the Department of Labor as a database, because we need to have UIF beneficiaries participating in this program at any given time. We do 50-50 partnerships, meaning that 50% of the learners must be people who contributed to the UIF. So we utilize that system to do the recruitment. And then in terms of the area that are going to host the learners, we are also dependent on the host employers. If we give an example, if we follow the slides that we presented, the MQA, when they did the advert to their host employers, we had host employers participating in all the provinces except in the Eastern Cape and in the Western Cape. We didn't have any MQA project in the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape, but all the other provinces were covered. If you look at the UIF Merit Data project, it's national, all the provinces are covered by this particular project. The MICT CETA, the first project, it was national as well. The second project, it is also national. I think Mnona indicated the statistics to the different areas. The EW CETA, this is where we said we wanted to pilot the solar design solution. It was only in Gauteng. UIF CETA, it is also national. And also to maybe cover the question that was raised by the Chairperson Manuel, that current projects that are taking place where maybe the members feel that they need to go and visit, the pilot training
has recently started with the 10 UIF learners. As we indicated, it's 50-50. TITA started their recruitment and the learners started in January. The UIF learners started last week. So those are some of the projects that they can be visited to see the learners. What is it that they are doing? Where are they accommodated? How is the training conducted?
Honorable Chairperson, there was a question that was asked regarding participation of the Department of Labor in digital migration. The reason why we have not included that information is because...
Yes. we then go to the catalyst, the answer catalyst. So we look at the people from that field who are in unemployment insurance fund in system. And then if once we get them and we realize that the number that you have there is not enough, you then look beyond the beneficiaries, you look at anybody now who needs the budget. So if a random process which is systems generated, so there isn't much interference by an official because you only pull people from the system, depending on the type of skills that you require. And the system tells you that F is a UI beneficiary, but does not meet the criteria, does not have the requisite skills, and therefore does not match the opportunity that you have. Now, if it's for training, it's something else, where you realize that X doesn't have the skill, but you want X to have the skill, you pull X and expose X to a whatever skill training that you want to take in. So that's how it's done. It doesn't matter whether your mother or father was a contributor at some stage. It has to do with the opportunity that is out there, and secondly, whether you do match the opportunity that you have.
Through you, Honorable Chair. I think in addition to what the DG explained, we request the offices to say if the system cannot give you people that are UIF beneficiaries that meet the minimum entry requirements, then you need to give a letter to say if the system failed to produce the necessary people. Then we take it out to the other partner to say, do you have people? Because some of the CITAs have a database of people that went to the CITAs to say, you want to be trained in this particular discipline. Then we extend that to the CITAs to say, give us people that are on your database, and we in turn need to register them on our database so that when it comes to auditing, the CITA database has got those people and the Department of Labor database has got those people. So that is what we do. We don't impose to say, no, we are going to train these people if they don't meet the minimum entry requirement. I think it also goes to the question with regards to the requirements, to say the program will dictate what are the minimum entry requirements, and we don't normally look at a program that only requires grade 12, because as the unemployment insurance fund, we sit with people that started working by default because the breadwinners in the family passed on. We find that a young girl or a young boy had to go and look for work, and we find that there's a potential for that particular person to be trained, but they don't have grade 12. The construction skills programs where we are partnering with the CITAs, all it needs is a grade 9. So we can select somebody from grade 9 to go and participate in those particular programs. So we are also trying to look at other programs that will require less requirement for UIF beneficiaries to be able to benefit from those programs. And in addition, there was a question raised by the Honorable Member regarding that this non-UIF beneficiaries, there is no payment for anybody to participate on UIF programs. We always tell these learners when you go and visit them that if they were required to pay to be on the program, they should inform us, because these are free programs that the Department of Labor is providing to the unemployed out there. No one has to be made to pay for a form or to be included onto the database. This is a free service. And regarding the allowances, we do pay stipends on our programs. The stipends are dependent. If it's a one-year program, we pay 1,500. If it's artisan programs, those now go with the host employer. Give an example of the M2A project. The learners were hosted by different mines. We find that the mine A is well off. They decide to pay their learners a stipend of 7,500. And mine B is still struggling. They decide to pay their learners a stipend of 3,500. But in all the mines that we have visited, we have never got to a situation where we find that the learners are paid according to the Department of Labor sectoral determination on learnership, which is a very very little amount that it can pay a learner. I think it pays for 2 weeks transport. So in most of the mines that we visited, we asked the learners, are you paid according to the sectoral determination? If they say no, then we don't even entertain further. They tell us that they are well paid. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. There was a question about digital migration, the role of the department when it comes to that program. We decided not to include that information because we are still in the process of finalizing awarding because the USASA, which is a state-owned entity of Department of Telecommunication and Postal Services, they approached us through an open tender process, through expression of interest. So it was not easy for us to begin to talk about that. But indeed, we are going to participate in that space. They have already given us the 18 accredited TVET colleges in the country. In Western Cape, it's South Cape College and West College. In Eastern Cape, it's Ingwe and King Linsa. Free State is Maluti and Mutewo. Gauteng is Western TVET and Swane. KwaZulu-Natal is SID and Mfolozi. Limpopo is Vembe, Liphalale. In Mpumalanga is Gert Sibande, Ehlanzeni. Northern Cape is Northern Cape Rural TVET. That's how they've named it. And also Northern Cape Urban FET of TVET College. Northwest is Vuselela TVET College and OPIT. So the digital migration program that we're going to participate in it is covering the whole country. There was also a question, okay, the payment, Rachel has already responded to that. What kind of skills are we focusing on? When we advertise expression of interest, we do indicate that potential partners must focus on critical and scarce skills. There was another question that was about the number of municipalities that are going to participate, the 77 municipalities. Rachel, can you put on the slide? In Eastern Cape, it's 14 municipalities.
Okay.
Yes. In Free State, it's 4. Gauteng, it's 9. KwaZulu-Natal, 15. Limpopo, 8. Mpumalanga, 4. Northern Cape, 5. Northwest, 7 municipalities. Western Cape, 12. The total number is 77 municipalities. It's inclusive of rural. It's a mixture of urban and rural municipalities. We are not the ones that are identifying the municipalities. It is not our competence to identify the municipalities that are going to participate. It is the competence of Department of Energy. They have their own criteria. We only come when it comes to skills development. There was a question whether I'm going to hire a company from an urban area to do solar design installation in the rural areas. We are not participating in the space of identifying companies to do the actual installation. There was another question. Do they get the allowance has been responded to? The age limit, when it comes to our training programs, we try our best not to discriminate, because as UIF, when we were collecting their money whilst they were working, we were not discriminating, so it would be unfair to say just because you are above 35, you are not going to participate. But the reality is that those that are above 35, they are not showing interest. So when we're looking at the ID numbers, we then picked up that our program is more focusing on young people. When it comes to pilots, the requirement was good marks on math and science. That was the specific requirement that was put up front. Good marks on math and science in grade 12. Thank you, Professor. Well, regarding other programs, for instance, solar cell installation, we did ask that question. They were more interested on people that understand English. They were not particular about the grades, but what was also important is the fitness of a person, because you, at some point, you'd be expected to carry the visa and put it on top of the roof. So if a person issues, must be fit. but it was good to see that there are women that are also participating, and they are doing fairly well in terms of carrying those solar devices, even if they are heavy, but yeah, they are doing fairly well. Thank you, Sir.
Yes. So, the goal
first
to
Through you, Chairperson, the requirement there was that the learners really needed to have an understanding of all those machinery that we see in the place where the pilot is. Now, the good marks in math, they were looking for somebody who had obtained math on higher grade, starting from a G symbol upwards. So those were the ones that were going to be considered. And on physical science, they even lower to say E symbol and upwards. So those were the people that were going to be considered. And we were lucky enough to also get UIF beneficiaries that have those marks.
So are you saying the science have been dropped to C?
The priority was on mathematics. So on mathematics, it was a G symbol upwards. Mm-hmm. And on physical science, it was an E symbol upwards. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's C from C upwards.
E.
E. Science.
Science.
You may not have a tool to measure fitness. You'll see that I'm fat and think I'm fit. And through some body, you will see me and think that person is not fit. So you must tread very carefully. Though I understand what you are saying, you are not directly involved in the selection, but as the Department of Labor sensitize your other counterparts, let the fitness not be used as a discrimination. Remember, you are taking unemployed people, some of which were forced to exit sometimes employment due to what they were infected by in the workplace. Thank you.
Thank you.
hearing all this, and thank you for the advice on it. Shouldn't this be more adequately placed in productivity for Africa, the whole program, and that's all with the Department of Higher Education, not with you? I think we need to go back to the missing, which is unemployment insurance funds. Because if you could spend the money and the application and the wherewithal, the effort that you're putting into it, on making sure that the UIF pays out quickly, efficiently, the queues go quickly, I personally think that it would be a lot more effort from your side to actually get that right, and instead of trying to diversify into some sort of program to extract. When we've got so many other departments to do, and I know this one is a third floor, and so thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to appeal to Honourable Bafeng. The challenge here is the labour we have left, because this is why that money should be utilized, and they have to account for those funds. If, for instance, you are saying they must stop this particular training here, I am happy when they say it is not their main line of function. But they can't take their money to boost somebody else. Because when it comes to accountability for the money, it may not come as frequent as they would have loved it to happen. When they are partnering, I think their MOAs are supposed to cover any fear which might come, because the other one, it's like in our communities, we grew up in areas where when our parents are going to cook at home, if one has beans and the other one has got firm, they come together, but it does not mean that you must take your firm to that other one. So for me, money things are very crucial. It will be, in a way, plunging the departments, the two departments, into crisis to say every time we have money, come take our money and make programs, because it is best if it's done in that way. So strengthen the resourcing of what you are funding.
Thank you, Lily. Anything that's going to say?
Thank you, just as a way of responding to Honourable Member Bahrain, if you look at internationally and you look at the how countries have dealt with the issue of an economy that is not performing well, they have tended to focus more on public employment programs. And that has been seen as the most suitable strategy to deal with issues of unemployment. So if you look at the labor integration program, you must look at it from a broader part of public employment services positive. Now, we have a public employment services branch in the department. And again, if you look at internationally where the unemployment insurance fund is located, it is located as a program within public employment services. So labor activation is just but one of the programs that UIF is running as part of the public employment services. The EPWP program is another public employment services program. So I don't think that the location is an issue here, but I think the issue should be how do we make sure that this program becomes much more effective, how do we scale it up so that it does in a way respond to the unemployment challenges that we face.
educating, and also it assists the UIF beneficiaries to reduce the risk of job losses. So the numbers are very small. I agree with you, but I think we can't take it elsewhere because it belongs to the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor is responsible for public employment services.
Thank you, any further questions, members? Hello, thank you, Chairperson. I think it's just a comment from my side. In saying the argument that has just been defended by the DG, I think if we look correctly, then we look at the unemployment at 63 of 2002, specifically to Section 18, and this is part of strengthening the section of the Act. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Mine is about the long queues for citizens. And because in Captain Park, I was there last week, and I find many people are there, and then they will continue to say they come many times to attend and break and all that. So we just try to highlight the old subject to the
thank you, Honorable Mojaka. I think OTG and the officials taken in long term side. However, today we are dealing with programs, you might find that people will be responding with a question and a fear, so it's noted. I don't see any other hand from the members, meaning that I should then thank everybody and thank the department. This is the presentation that you have done today. Shows that the Department of Labor also is practically involved in assisting the city, despite the fact that the city has been removed from them, but they are still caring about those who contributed in the UIF. And, you know, I did not understand I called the Department of Labor to tell about more by outside of the system, but I was not really convinced that if I take them to my constituency, there is much that people are contributing. But I think today it's much more clearer than what I thought it could be, and it means the number of people who use it. In our thank you so much, and thank you for your presence, and thank you for the members for the contribution and the discussion that you offered. That is the end of the meeting. It is adjourned, and thank you for the
Thank you. place a sample. Okay.